I thank you, Bill, for your invitation to me this morning, and I just want to say the reason that we're blessed is because we have a whole congregation of lay people who have gifts, and we are the priesthood of believers, and that is why we can put together a rookie Sunday when our pastor is in the Holy Land. So I'm just grateful for this congregation, and would you pray with me? And now, Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of each heart be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, it seems, if you were listening to the psalm that we just read together responsively, that we have an angry biblical guest in our midst this morning. I don't know if you caught that, but we do. The author of Psalm 4 is having some relationship troubles. He feels misunderstood and wrongly accused, and he's not afraid to let us know about it. But what he doesn't know is that we have been there, haven't we? We get it. We know relationships are hard work. And broken relationships are painful. So, what relationship troubles keep you up at night? What was said, or maybe left unsaid, that resulted in hurt or shame? When have you been wrongly accused for something you did not do? Or what happened that made you say you will never trust another person ever again? Healthy relationships demand so much from us, so much. And yet the smallest miscommunication can cause the whole thing to fall apart. So in the first part of Psalm 4, in verses 1 through 3, if you need to refer back to your bulletin, it's in there, the psalmist is lamenting the relationship thorn in his own flesh. He doesn't stuff his feelings deep inside by any means, but he is feeling pretty hemmed in. And yet, he doesn't lash out in anger at those people who are ruining his reputation with gossip and lies. What the psalmist does is cry out to God to hear his prayer and to give him some room to breathe and figure things out. He calls out those vain words and lies as unfaithful behavior on the part of his accusers. But then, at the height of his lament, the psalmist claims, "The Lord has set apart the faithful for himself, and the Lord hears when I call to him." He's reminding himself that God can be trusted to be present and to hear our prayers. But what about this notion that we've been set apart by God? That as the people of God, we are called to higher moral ground in these situations. I don't know how you handle this kind of thing, but I confess I find it rather challenging to keep my focus on God when I'm in the moment of being personally attacked by someone. And yet, I know God calls us to do our best. God asks us to live faithfully by holding on to God's promises in the midst of life's challenges. For me, Psalm 4 is like a neon sign, annoyingly flashing a question that it doesn't want God's people to forget. A sign asking, When life disturbs you, how are you going to respond? For better or worse, our nation was built around the ideal of rugged individualism. We all know that. The expectation is alive and well that you will pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. The implication is you have to fix yourself all by yourself. But here's a little bit of trivia for you this morning. The bootstrap saying originally referred to something so sensational that it was obviously impossible to do. I speak the truth. And the truth is, we don't all begin our lives from the same vantage point. We don't all get the same opportunities along the way. And yet, even though we are facing race, class, and gender inequities in all the major institutions in this country, the bootstrap solution continues to be deeply embedded in our American ethos. Well, thinking about Psalm 4 brought a story to mind that I recently heard on a program called Radio Lab. It's about a man named Jim who had had more than his fair share of life's challenges and difficult relationships. Jim had been diagnosed with something called bipolar disorder with psychotic tendencies. He struggled most of his life with mood swings and anger issues. He was easily provoked to violence. Once he even poured hot coffee from a second-story window onto the head of a neighbor passing by. The neighbors, as you can imagine, had come to know him as that guy with the temper. But you know, Jim's story really begins when he was a child growing up in St. Louis. Jim's parents never really adequately supervised Jim and his younger brother. And one day, the boys wandered away from home and down to the Mississippi River. Jim's brother began wading in the water, but Jim told him to stop because it was too deep. Jim's brother didn't listen, and in an instant, he was caught in the swiftly moving water. Jim witnessed his brother struggling to swim, and he begged God to please save him. His brother surfaced 3 times, but after the 3rd time, Jim never saw his brother again. He was terrified, and he ran home to get his parents. And do you know, Jim's parents were furious. They blamed Jim for not watching out for his little brother. They said Jim should have saved his brother. They said they wished it had been Jim that drowned instead of his brother. Jim was only 7 years old. Things continued to deteriorate in Jim's relationship with his parents. They never stopped blaming him for his brother's death. And when he was 16 years old, his mother said she just couldn't have him in the house anymore and kicked him out. Jim's life spiraled out of control. He was forced into homelessness. And living on the streets, Jim grew angrier and angrier as the years went by. Well, I couldn't help but wonder if Psalm 4 had anything to offer Jim. If we read the rest of Psalm 4 in verses 4 through 8, we notice the psalmist moves away from his personal lament to offering advice to God's people should they ever find themselves in his shoes. This part of the prayer offers us guidance on how to remain faithful to God in the midst of life's trials. It says, when you are disturbed, do not sin. Ponder it on your beds and be silent. The psalmist is telling us that when life throws its punches, we need to take a step back, find space to breathe and reflect. We are encouraged to refrain from sin, from turning away from God when we are overwhelmed. Instead, we are to turn toward God, the God who is big enough to handle the whole range and intensity of our human emotions, the God who can be trusted to transform our anger and despair into something we can manage and learn from. As I pondered what right sacrifices might be in today's context, the words of Jesus came to mind, saying, "Follow me. Take up your cross and follow me." So, what stands in the way of us putting our trust in God, especially when difficulty or suffering enters our lives? Do we dare? Do we dare to offer a right sacrifice by entrusting God with the whole of our lives? The good news is, when we seek God's help, God will never tell us just to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. Because God's way is the beloved community, where we care for one another. And our identity and worth are never defined by reputation or wealth or power or any of the other things the world says it is, but by the image of God that dwells within each one of us. The psalmist understands that right relationship with God is the only way to right relationship with all of God's creation. And Psalm 4 sets us back on the path of trusting God enough to place our life in God's hands. The prayer closes with the psalmist placing his trust in God and in return finding the peace to lie down and sleep through the night. So what about us? When life disturbs us, how are we going to respond? And what about Jim? How did he respond? Well, Jim continued to struggle with anger, but eventually he was able to move from the streets of St. Louis into a small apartment by himself. And while the neighbors still steered clear of him, Jim had been welcomed into a community of faith. One day, as Jim was leaving church, some fellow congregants caught up with him to give him some good news they had. It turns out Jim was quite an animal lover and had been saving money to buy an African gray parrot. The couple knew of a kid in the neighborhood who had one for sale, and the cost for the bird in the cage was going to be half of what Jim thought he would be paying just for the parrot. So when Jim met Sadie for the first time, she was about a foot tall with piercing yellow eyes and bright red tail feathers. But to Jim, it was immediately obvious that she had not been cared for. Because when birds are stressed, they tend to rip out their own feathers. And Sadie didn't have any flight feathers, and Jim noticed that. He almost changed his mind, but you know, he just couldn't leave her there. So he paid the boy, he took Sadie home, and he began to take care of her. In only 3 days, Sadie bowed her head to Jim, which meant she had bonded with him. Over the years, Jim had been working on his anger by talking himself down when something triggered him. He would practice saying things to himself like, "Calm down, you'll be okay, everything's fine, it's not as bad as you think." And 3 weeks into this relationship with Sadie, Jim noticed she was beginning to imitate him. He decided he would reward her every time she said something that helped him calm down. He even taught her to say, "I love you, Jim." Jim registered Sadie as a service animal, and he found a small birdcage designed to be worn as a backpack. Jim and Sadie went everywhere together. They rode the bus, and they went to shops and restaurants. He took her to the gym. They even went to church together. Things were going pretty well for Jim. When something would set him off, he would begin to talk himself down, and Sadie would take her cue and chime in with those calming phrases she had learned. Well, Dr. Irene Pepperberg, an expert on African gray parrots and a professor at Brandeis University, explained Sadie's behavior this way. Parrots know they are prey in the animal world. They are not able to eat or preen or sleep unless they are certain their flock mates are looking out for them. Sadie was learning what Jim said when he became upset because she was looking out for him. She repeated his phrases because somehow she could sense that doing so helped him return to a calm state. Jim had become Sadie's flockmate, a flock of two, but a flock nevertheless. But then one day, something really different happened. Jim and Sadie were walking in the neighborhood, as they often did, when suddenly a reckless driver cut them off at a crosswalk, barely missing hitting them, and Jim felt his anger begin to build. He was so shaken by the close call, he couldn't remember to talk to himself. He was hopelessly locked in fear and anger. When all of a sudden, Sadie said, "Calm down. You'll be okay. Everything's fine. I love you, Jim." Do we dare to trust God with the whole of our lives? When life disturbs us, how are we going to respond?